Hey, welcome back everyone to the channel. Tonight's terrifying story is a family from the state of Massachusetts goes on a very overdue promised camping trip with the family. Well, hello. Lotta, you want to say hello? Okay. Anyways, so see you later, bud. So they end up choosing a campground in a national park up in the state of Maine, which is probably a good 8 hours to drive up there, give or take with traffic. And what happens while they're on this camping trip will terrify you. But first, before we get into that, we have a little breakfast. We have a bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddle. And, bacon, egg, and cheese, half of a burrito here from McDonald's. See, I'm not... Oh. Of course, we got some. Oh. Come on. The best part. Hot sauce goes on everything. What could I say? I'm not a fan of McDonald's, but it's been about 2 years since I've had McDonald's, because the last time I went there for dinner and got a Big Mac, when I bit into the meat was gray. I didn't think it was real meat. I thought it was something fake. I don't think their meat is real, but we're going to give them another chance. It's been a couple years, but enjoy tonight's story. It's been 4 years since that trip to Maine, and I still can't walk in the woods without feeling like something's watching me. My wife thinks I'm better now, that the nightmares have slowed down. But she doesn't see me wake up at 3 a.m., staring out of the window at the tree line behind our house. She doesn't hear what I hear, the rustle of leaves when the air is still, the quiet sound of breathing that doesn't belong to anyone in the house. I tell myself it's the wind, or maybe just a simple deer. I have to believe that, because the alternative means it followed us home. We left Massachusetts early that morning. My wife, Laura, had packed the cooler the night before. Sandwiches, water bottles, juice boxes for the kids, and of course, beer for me. Evan was 9, all curiosity and energy, and Maddie, just 6, was glued to her stuffed fox that she called Button. It was our first real family camping trip, something I had promised for years, but never found time for. When I finally cleared my work schedule, Laura picked Maine. Clean air, quiet trails, ocean views. We didn't name the park when she told friends. Just said, up north. A national park on the coast. I had been there once before, back in college. I remembered the pine forests that seemed endless. Cliffs dropping into icy water, and morning so foggy, the world felt erased. I'd never forgotten the beauty, or how quiet it was after sunset. The drive up took almost 7 hours. By the time we crossed into Maine, the sky was overcast, a heavy blanket of gray that seemed to press down on the horizon. The kids dozed off somewhere past Bangor. I watched the trees close in around the road, thick spruce and fir, the kind that block out the light even in mid-afternoon. Every now and then, we'd pass a dirt turnoff with a weathered sign for some back road or trailhead. When we had reached the ranger station at the park entrance, the lot was empty except for one government truck. The ranger who greeted us was an older man, maybe late 50s, with a deep tan and the kind of wrinkles you get from decades outdoors. His badge read, P. Carter.
"Quiet week," he said, scanning our paperwork. "You folks picked a good time. Most people stay clear of the coast this late in the season.
He handed me a laminated map. I noticed a few sections of the trails marked with red X's.
Storm damage?
I asked. He paused before nodding.
You could say that. Stick to the main loops. Don't go too far off trail. GPS gets spotty out there.
Laura smiled politely, and we thanked him. I caught his eyes as we left the office. He looked like he wanted to say more, but didn't. The campsite we reserved was about 5 miles deeper in. The road narrowed, trees bending overhead until they formed a tunnel of green.
It was beautiful.
By the time we had reached the site, the clouds had thickened, the air carrying the heavy scent of rain mixed with pine sap. The place itself was absolutely beautiful. A clearing near a small lake, ridged by birch and spruce. You could see the reflection of the trees ripple when the wind picked up. I remember thinking it was exactly the kind of place you would see in a travel brochure. Untouched, peaceful, almost too still. We set up camp. The kids helped pitch the tent while Laura started the fire. By dusk, the fog rolled in from the lake in soft ribbons, twisting between the trees. I cooked hot dogs on the fire while the kids chased each other around with glow sticks. For a while, it felt perfect. Then, sometime after 9, as the fire died down and we settled into our sleeping bags, I heard something. It wasn't close, maybe 50 yards out or so, but it was heavy. A crunch of dry branches, slow and deliberate. I froze. Laura was already half asleep, her breathing soft beside me. I told myself it was just an animal, moose maybe, deer, God, it could be anything. They were common in the area, after all. I forced myself to lie still until the sound faded. In the morning, I almost convinced myself I had imagined it. We spent the day hiking the easier trails. Maddie loved collecting pine cones and showing me shapes in the bark. Evan found a fallen log covered in mushrooms and spent a half an hour trying to photograph them. The park was almost eerily empty. We didn't pass another group all day. Just signs of recent storms, broken branches, moss damp underfoot, and a silence that felt thicker the deeper we went in. When we returned that afternoon, something about the campsite felt off. The fire ring had been scattered. A few stones moved. Laura thought maybe raccoons. But the cooler was untouched. Nothing was missing. It was small, but enough to unsettle me. That night, as I sat by the fire alone after everyone else had turned in, I thought I saw movement in the tree lines across the lake. Not a clear shape, just a suggestion of something pale between the trunks. I waited for it to move again, but the fog thickened, and it vanished. I listened for footsteps, for any sound at all, but the forest was absolutely still. I went to bed telling myself it was the moonlight playing tricks on me through the mist. But when I finally drifted off, I dreamed of tall shapes standing among the birches, so thin they looked almost part of the trees themselves. The second morning started gray again, the kind of light that never seemed to brighten no matter how high the sun gets. A low fog sat on the lake like breath on glass. I woke first and stepped out of the tent, stretching the stiffness from my back. Yeah, air mattresses suck. Everything smelled like wet pine and wood smoke. Laura joined me with two cups of coffee.
You didn't sleep either? She said.
It wasn't a question. I shrugged.
Just not used to sleeping near the ground.
I didn't tell her about the sound I'd heard again around 3 a.m. The slow crunch of something circling the site. The faint click of a twig snapping. It had come and gone in small arcs, never close enough to see, just close enough to know it was real. After breakfast, we decided to hike one of the longer loops that wound towards the interior ridges. The ranger's map showed it as a moderate trail, 3 miles to an overlook, then a switchback down through cedar and birch. Evan begged to bring his camera. I slung the day pack with water and snacks over my shoulder, and we set off. The woods changed as we climbed. The air grew cooler, quieter. The usual forest chatter, birds, crickets, the buzz of insects, thinned until all we heard was the crunch of our own boots. The trees here were older, their trunks thick with mottled and lichen. Some leaned at odd angles, as if bent by years of wind coming off the coast. Halfway up, Maddie stopped.
Dad, what's that smell?
I caught it too. Something faint, metallic. Almost like pennies soaked in rainwater. Laura wrinkled her nose.
Probably a dead animal, she said quickly, tugging Maddie's hand.
But her grip tightened just a little too much. We reached the overlook before noon. The view opened onto rolling green that stretched to the distant ocean, patches of fog drifting like ghosts between ridges. Evan snapped photos while Maddie balanced pebbles on a rock. For a few minutes it felt normal again. Just a family trip, the kind you would look back on years later. Then Evan frowned through his viewfinder.
There's somebody down there, he said.
I looked where he pointed. 100 yards maybe below, near the base of the hill, stood a shape between the trees. Tall, thin, but still. At first I thought it was a tree trunk catching the light, until it shifted. A slow turn that revealed something pale against the darker forest. Too pale for bark. I blinked, and it was gone. Laura hadn't seen it.
Probably a hiker, she said when I told her. We're not the only ones out here.
But when I checked the soft earth along the trail on the way back, there was no fresh prints besides ours. Only impressions that looked wrong. Toes too long, heels too narrow, pressed deep as if by something heavy standing on the balls of its feet. That night, the wind picked up. The tent walls breathed in and out with each gust, the fabric whispering, screaming. I couldn't sleep. Around midnight, I heard the lake again. Soft ripples, then the distant sound of something stepping into the shallows. One, two, then silence. I unzipped the flap slow, just enough to peer out. The fog was thick, silver in the moonlight. And saw nothing. Only the faint shimmer of disturbed water near the far shore, as if something large had waded out and disappeared beneath the surface. I zipped the flap and laid there, eyes open until dawn. By morning, everyone was tired. We ate in silence, pretending the fatigue was from hiking, not from what we weren't saying. Laura finally asked,
"Do you think we should head out early?"
I wanted to. Every instinct told me to pack up and leave. but Evan's face fell, and Maddie started pleading to stay one more night. I told myself it was paranoia, that we were safe, that the Rangers would have warned us if there was anything dangerous in the area. We decided on one last short walk, a loop around the lake before lunch. The path was narrow, overgrown in places. The water was so still it reflected the sky like a sheet of glass. Halfway around, we found something that made me stop cold. A deer carcass, or what was left of one, lying near the tree line. No visible wounds, no blood, just emptiness, as if something had taken everything soft from inside and left the skin like a husk. Even without seeing any blood, it was utterly terrifying. Laura gasped. I told the kids to go ahead, voice shaking more than I wanted it to. We reported it to the ranger station that afternoon. The younger ranger behind the desk, a woman with sharp eyes and a name tag that read R. Davis, took notes without expression. When I mentioned the tracks, she glanced up.
"Probably coyotes," she said.
"Coyotes don't walk on two legs," I replied before I could stop myself. Her pencil paused mid-scribble.
"You'd be surprised what you think's out here," she said finally. "Best not to wander off the marked trails. Fog plays tricks."
On our drive back to camp, Laura didn't speak. The kids slept again, the kind of heavy, dreamless sleep that only children get. I watched the trees slide by and realized I was counting them without meaning to. Each trunk, each bark space between, waiting for one to move. That evening, as the sun bled out behind the ridgeline, I decided to stay awake. I told Laura I'd sit by the fire for a while, keep an eye out for the wildlife. She smiled tiredly and disappeared into the tent with the kids. By 10 o'clock, the fog was back. I tossed another log on the fire and listened. For a long time, there was nothing but the hiss of sap and the low hum of crickets. Then came that smell again, that metal and rot drifting on the wind. The firelight flickered, bending shadows across the trees. Somewhere in the dark, wood creaked. A long, slow sound, like weight shifting against bark. I held my breath. The forest seemed to lean closer, waiting. Then, two faint pinpoints of light between the trees. Not bright, not like eyes reflecting, more like embers hovering in the mist. They blinked out, then appeared again a little closer. I stood without meaning to, heart hammering. The air felt thick, every instinct screaming that something was there just outside the circle of firelight. But when I blinked, the lights were gone. Only the fog moved, curling where they had been. I didn't sleep that night either. By morning, my nerves were raw. The air had that heavy stillness again. No birds, no wind, just the low hum of the world holding its breath. Laura noticed it too. She didn't ask what I had seen, but I could tell she knew something was wrong with me. She moved slower, kept glancing at the tree line as she packed the cooler. Evan said he wanted to go down to the lake again before breakfast. I told him no. He rolled his eyes and said, "Dad, it's literally 20 feet away," and went anyways before I could stop him. I followed after a few seconds, trying not to look like I was chasing him. The fog was thinner than it had been the night before, but it still clung low over the water. Evan stood near the edge, staring down.
"Dad?" he said quietly. "Look at this."
Something dark floated under the surface, long like a branch, but wrong somehow. As the water rippled, I saw what looked like hair fanning out from one end.
My stomach turned.
I reached for a stick and prodded it closer to shore. The stick sank before it even touched. Whatever it was, it slipped away soundlessly into deeper water. Evan's voice trembled.
"Was that an animal?"
"Probably," I said, though the word felt hollow.
"Let's get back to camp, bud."
Laura didn't ask questions when she saw our faces. We agreed without really saying it that we'd pack up and leave by noon. I told the kids it was because of the weather.
I didn't believe it any more than they did.
The ranger station was quieter than the day before. The woman, Davis, wasn't at the counter. A man about my age stood there instead, clean cut. Name tag read, Ward. He smiled the way people do when they're trained to, not because they feel it. I told him we had heard strange noises near the site again, and that I wanted to file another report just in case. He listened politely, eyes calm but flat. When I mentioned the thing in the water, his pin dropped.
"What part of the lake?"
"Near the eastern ridge," I said. "About 50 yards from the trailhead." He nodded, made a note, then looked up.
"Could be debris. Happens after heavy rainfall. Nothing to worry about."
I wanted to push, but Laura's hand found mine.
"It's fine," she said softly. "Let's just go."
We left the park 30 minutes later. The ranger watched us drive through the rearview mirror, expression unreadable. We should have felt relieved on the road out, but we didn't. The forest never seemed to thin, no matter how far we went. I checked the clock again and again. 12:30, then 1, then 1:15, and the trees still pressed close on both sides, the same shapes repeating like we were looping through them. Then Maddie said quietly,
"Dad, that's our campsite."
I almost laughed, until I saw it too. A clearing on the right, unmistakably ours. Same fire pit, same logs. Even the blackened stick Evan had used to roast marshmallows. We hadn't turned around. The compass app on my phone said we were heading due south, away from camp, not towards it. I slowed the car. Laura whispered,
"Keep driving."
We didn't stop. 10 minutes later, the trees finally broke open into the main highway. I didn't look back. That night, we stayed at a motel about an hour outside the park. The kids fell asleep instantly. Laura showered and sat at the edge of the bed in silence, towel wrapped around her shoulders.
"You think we're safer now?"
she asked. I didn't answer. Because even there, with the hum of the air conditioner and the parking lot light glowing through the curtains, I could still smell that faint metallic tang, like the woods had followed us. I know how crazy that sounds. At some point, I did doze off. When I woke, the room was dark except for the blinking red digits on the clock. The air was colder than it should have been. I turned towards the window. The curtain had shifted just slightly, as if brushed by a hand from the outside. I got up slowly heart pounding. When I reached the window, I saw only my own reflection, and behind it, in the glass, something pale standing by the edge of the lot. Then, too tall. Its head, if you could even call it a head, looked more like a deer skull with antlers. The moment I blinked, it disappeared. I couldn't believe it. We went home the next morning. I tried to tell myself it was stress, exhaustion, coincidence, hell, maybe a fucking bad dream. I even convinced myself for a long while. But the nights didn't get better. I'd wake up to faint scratches on the siding, to the smell of rain and rust drifting through a closed window. Evan started having nightmares too. Maddie stopped sleeping alone. A month later, I got a call from the Park Service. A calm male voice I didn't recognize.
Mr. Lawson, this is Ranger Ward. Just following up about your report.
I told him that I didn't want to talk. He then said,
That's fine. We just want to confirm that you and your family are doing well. It's important people feel safe after their visit, you know?
Something in his tone made my skin crawl, like he already knew the answer. Before hanging up, he added, almost as if an afterthought,
If you ever decide on coming back, stay to the main campgrounds. The old trails near the East Lake aren't maintained anymore. They're really not for visitors.
Then he hung up. I didn't sleep that night. Near dawn, I went outside to the backyard, coffee in hand, just to feel the cold air. The woods behind our house are small, barely a strip before they hit the neighboring development, but they looked different somehow. Denser, deeper. And as the first light crept through the trees, I saw movement. Not running, not rushing, just something slipping quietly between the trunks, too gaunt to be human, its skin the same pale gray as fog. It turned its head once towards me, and though it was 100 feet away, I felt the air thin around me like pressure dropping before a storm. I blinked, and it simply disappeared. I didn't mean to go back. For weeks after the call, I told myself that part of my life was over. I threw away the maps, deleted the ranger's number, tried to bury the memory under the rhythm of work and bills and grocery lists. But every night, just as I'm about to drift off, I hear that faint, hollow knock in the distance. Always the same. Like something remembering the sound of human hands. Laura pretended not to notice. Or maybe she did notice and was just better at ignoring it than I was. But Evan stopped going outside after sunset. Maddie kept her curtains closed even during the day. The park hadn't followed up physically, but it had left a splinter under the skin of our lives. By late September, I couldn't take it anymore. I told Laura that I was going back, that I needed closure. The word sounded fake even as I said it. She didn't try to stop me, but she looked at me for a long time, then said quietly,
If you do, don't tell me what you find.
The road north looked different in autumn. The trees had bled into shades of copper and rust, the sky a deeper kind of blue. But as I passed the wooden sign for the park, its name weathered to near illegibility, I felt that same weight in my chest. The ranger station was empty. Dust on the counter. A single map curling at the edges under the fluorescent light. The radio on the wall crackled softly, unattended. A note hung near the door. Temporarily closed for trail maintenance. Do not enter beyond gate. I stood there for a long time, then stepped over the chain and started walking. The forest swallowed the sound. No wind, no insects, just whispers of my own breath and the crunch of leaves under my shoes. The trail to the East Lake had grown in places, the wood planks of the bridge slick with moss. I remember holding Evan's hand there, telling him not to run. The memory felt older than it should have. I found our old campsite by late afternoon. The fire pit was still there, half buried in ash. Someone or something had dragged branches into a crude shelter nearby, like a nest. Inside it, I found shreds of clothing. Not ours. A uniform shirt. The patch torn off, but the name stitched faintly above the pocket. Ward. My stomach turned. I backed away, almost tripping over a log. And that's when I saw the prints. Not animal. Not quite human. Long, thin, with sharp impressioned toes. They led downwards towards the lake, vanishing into the mud. I followed. I reached the water's edge as the light began to fade. The air smelled of iron again, cold, metallic, like right before a storm. Ripples spread across the lake without wind to cause them. Something was moving beneath the surface now, slow. I crouched, pulse hammering. A shape broke the water. Not a head exactly, but a suggestion of one. Elongated, narrow, with hollow eyes where eyes might have been. I couldn't move. Every instinct screamed to run, but the sound of it, the wet, rattling breath, held me there. Then from the tree line behind me came a voice. Low, cracked, half whispered.
Leave.
I spun around. Nothing. Only the dying light slanting through the trees. But the word hung there, vibrating in the air. I didn't argue. I frickin' ran. Night hit fast. The forest blurred into shadow, and I recognized I'd lost the trail. Every direction looked the same. My flashlight beam caught trunks marked with deep scratches, parallel lines gouged into bark, fresh enough to bleed sap. The smell of decay thickened until it sat on my tongue. Then I heard it. The same noise as I had heard before, closer this time. Cracking of twigs? Bones? I couldn't really tell. And then followed by some thumping noises along with it. My legs moved before I told them to. Branches tore at my sleeves. Roots caught at my shoes. I stumbled into a clearing. And there it was. Tall, emaciated. Skin pulled tight over bones like stretched leather. Eyes. Red. Not glowing exactly, but reflecting light that wasn't there. Its mouth hung slightly open, teeth thin and pale like shards of ice. Head, like that of a deer skull, antlers 2 feet wide in all crazy angles, looking like frickin' skeleton fingers. Its body, it was
so thin and frail looking, but so incredibly strong too. It didn't rush me. It just stood there, head tilting to the side, slow, the way a predator studies something that doesn't quite fit its own world. I wanted to scream. What came out, though, was not. More of a whisper. "What are you?" I said, half paralyzed. It blinked once, slow, deliberate, and the woods seemed to fold around it, swallowing its shape. The cold hit like a physical blow. Fuck that, I turned and ran until my lungs burned. Dawn found me half collapsed on the side road, mud covered and shaking. A maintenance truck pulled up sometime later. A ranger I didn't recognize leaned out, asked if I was hurt. I just nodded. He said the park had been closed for months, restoration work, he called it, and that no one was supposed to be inside. When I asked about Ranger Ward, he frowned. "There's no one working here by that name, sir," he said. "Hasn't been for the years that I've been here." He drove me back to my car where I had parked. I didn't say another word. I never went back after that. But sometimes when the night is quiet enough, I'll hear those same creepy noises from outside my house again. Always from the same tree line. Always just before dawn. And every winter, when the air gets dry and the wind carries that scent of metal and pine, I think about what's still out there in those woods. Hungry, patient, and waiting for the next family that decides to pitch a tent too close to the water. I thought leaving the woods would end it. For a few days, it almost did. My phone stopped ringing in the middle of the night. The air outside the house felt normal again, and I started to believe the rational story everyone wanted me to believe. Fatigue, dehydration, imagination. Your eyes just playing tricks on you. Then the letters started coming. The first one was typed on plain paper, no return address. It thanked me for my concern for park safety and reminded me that unauthorized entry into federal restoration zones can result in fines or imprisonment. I hadn't told anyone where I'd gone. A week later, another arrived. This one handwritten. "For your family's sake, let it rest." I tried to file an incident report with state authorities. The clerk on the other end of the line paused, asked for the park's name. When I told her, she said, "We don't have any open files for any facility by that name." And the call dropped. Laura told me to stop. "You're scaring the kids," she said. And she was right. Evan had started leaving the hallway light on again. Maddie jumped at every door knock at the front door. The thing we had run from was still shaping our lives, only now it wore bureaucracy instead of claws. By winter, I was barely sleeping. I'd go out to the porch just to breathe in the cold air, cup of coffee and a cigarette I was hiding from my wife, to remind myself that the world still existed outside my own head. Some nights, I'd see the faint glow of taillights on the distant road, always stopping for a few seconds at the curve near our driveway, then moving on. One night, I walked out farther, halfway down the gravel to see who it was. A government SUV, plain white, engine idling. The window lowered an inch, just enough for a voice to carry.
"Go back inside, Mr. Lawson." Holy shit. I did.
The spring thawed the snow, but not the silence. Every attempt to talk to journalists, to online forums, even to a friend who worked for the local paper, ended the same way. Either they didn't return calls, or they did and sounded suddenly nervous. One reporter emailed once, asking for proof. I sent him photos from the trail, the shredded shirt from the ranger's name, GPS coordinates. He replied, "The story's already been handled."
Then nothing.
I stopped trying to prove anything. I started writing instead. Every detail that I could remember. The smell of the iron, the way the creature moved, the exact pitch of the cracking noises, the knocking, the shuffling. I told myself it was therapy. That maybe if I just poured it out here, it would leave me alone. But sometimes when I read the pages back, there were sentences I don't remember writing. Descriptions that felt too precise, too other. Words like hunger and trade that didn't belong to me. By midsummer, a storm swept through and knocked out power for the night. The house filled with that dense, damp heat, and we all slept downstairs. I woke to thunder, or something like it, at about 3 a.m. The kids were asleep. Laura sat at the window, staring out.
"Did you hear that?" she whispered.
At first it was only rain, then under it, that rhythm again.
Its noises, slow, but still audible from somewhere just beyond the yard out back.
Lightning flashed, and for the briefest instant, the trees looked wrong. Shapes too tall, too thin, like silhouettes stretching against the sky. When darkness returned, the other noises did too. The next morning, everything looked normal. The air smelled of wet earth and pine. I walked over to the edge of the woods. The ground was clean, no prints, no sign of visitors. But wedged into the bark of the nearest tree was a small metal tag. Stamped into it, barely legible, were three letters. NPS. I took it inside, locked it in a drawer, and never spoke of it again. It's been 3 years now. The kids are older. Laura won't talk about the trip, and I don't blame her. Sometimes a government newsletter arrives in the mail with bland updates about conservation progress in the Northeast region. I never asked for them. They just keep coming. I still go out on the porch before dawn. I still listen. And when the wind dies completely, when the world feels suspended between breath and silence, I could hear the faintest echo from far away. Wood on wood, snapping noises. The forest remembers, and the people who survive it make sure the rest of us forget. Epilogue. It's strange the way memories change shape. When I think back to that summer, the details blur, the smell of the campfire smoke, the sound of Evan laughing somewhere behind the tent, Laura humming under her breath while she cooked. Sometimes I almost convince myself that it was just an ordinary trip, that the woods were just woods. But then I'll dream, and the dream always ends the same way. A line of trees that never ends, the light bleeding out of the sky, and something moving just beyond sight. Slow. Calm. It's not chasing me. It's just remembering me, watching me, studying me. I don't know really what the fuck it was doing, but it didn't attack. I never sent my notes to anyone.
I keep them locked up in an old tin box in the attic, wrapped in a plastic bag to keep the paper from yellowing. Part of me believes that if I ever destroyed them, the story will start again somewhere else. Another part thinks maybe that's already happened. Every few months, another headline flashes across the local news. Missing hiker, search ongoing. No foul play suspected. Different parks, same phrasing. Always the same photograph. An open trail, sunlight through the trees. The promise of safety. People love the illusion of safety.